I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Sri Shad Goswami Prabhu Ki. So today we're going to go into the southern side of the ocean of Nectar of Devotion. We're going to go into chapter 20. So chapter 20 is entitled Transcendental Mellow, and it begins with an introduction into the subject matters which are going to be discussed in the southern side of the ocean. So you can refer to your overview books and have your Nectar of Devotion open there on page 151. And let us go through step by step. First of all, in the first paragraph, Srila Rupa Goswami offers his obeisances. This is like a little bit of a Mangala Charana, invoking auspiciousness by offering humble obeisances to Sanatan. Srila Prabhupada discusses there that Sanatan can be interpreted in either or both of two ways. Either Sanatan can mean Krishna. Sanatan means eternal in a very literal sense. So Krishna, he's the supreme eternal. And in that particular verse, that Sanatan is described in relation to Aga. So if Sanatan is taken to mean Krishna, then the reference to Aga will be in terms of how Krishna killed Agasura. If Sanatan is to be interpreted as being Sanatan Goswami, which it certainly easily could be, in fact it can very easily be interpreted in either way. So in the case of Sanatan, then we know, in the case of Sanatan Goswami, we know that he was one of the spiritual masters. He was like the Siksha Guru, the main leading Siksha Guru of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami took that position of disciple in front of Sanatan Goswami. Although he was initiated by Lord Chaitanya, of course, but still, and in fact Sanatan was, they were both really initiated at the same time, but still, Rupa accepted Sanatan as his spiritual master and really accepted him like that and related with him like that. So then Sanatan can refer to Sanatan Goswami. And in that context, aga can be interpreted to mean sins or sinful reactions. Agasura, just like there's one other demon killed by Krishna called Narakasura. Narak means hell. So Narak Asura means demon from hell. So Agasura means sinful demon. So Agasura was certainly a sinful demon. But Aga can also just mean our sins or sinful reactions in general. So in that context, when applied to Sanatan Goswami, it means that Sanatan being such a great devotee and such a great teacher of Krishna consciousness, he's given us so much. He's given all the not just his contemporary disciples and students, but even right through to today and right on through the Kali Yuga, he's given so much for everyone to free them from their sinful reactions and their sinful tendencies and so on. So that's there in the first paragraph. At the bottom, though, Prabhupada begins to introduce, in a very broad sense, the subject matter of the southern side of the ocean. In this division of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the author wants to describe the general symptoms of the transcendental mellow or loving mood of discharging devotional service. A little further down, Prabhupada will tell us that the Sanskrit term for that is rasa. Now, before we start getting into this term rasa and the implications of that, let us look at the second paragraph. This is very important because in the second paragraph on page 151, Srila Prabhupada is listing out, first of all, in that last sentence of the first paragraph, in a very broad way, Prabhupada says, in this southern side of the ocean, we're going to discuss rasa. But we are going to discuss this subject in terms of five different features, five different factors, all of which contribute to rasa and make up rasa, and without which there would be no rasa or transcendental mellow, loving mood, deep transcendental taste. So there are five factors involved. So there they are listed out in the second paragraph. Five bhavas. We've already explained that bhava means ecstasy. Prabhupada, in the eastern side of the ocean, has translated bhava bhakti as loving ecstasy, devotional service in ecstasy, ecstatic loving devotion, like this. So now the stage of bhava, in these terms, it means the level of devotional service on which you experience these five bhavas. That is what the level called bhava, it really means. In other words, there is not exactly, to be precise, there is not exactly one thing called bhava, but there are five things. There are five bhavas. And when you're experiencing them, even to a small degree, then it can be said that you're on the level of bhava. So these are those five special ecstasies, five bhavas then. Vibhava, special symptoms, or more specifically, causes of ecstasy. Two, anubhava, subsequent ecstasy. Three, sattvika bhava, constitutional or existential ecstasy. Vyabhichari bhava, aggressive ecstasy. And sthayi bhava, fervent, or perhaps more specifically, continuous, or even you could say permanent ecstasy. Yeah. Now, it might be a little difficult for us to grasp the idea from the little translations that Prabhupada has given for each ecstasy, but now let us try to First of all, before we go into them individually, which is what this whole southern side does, it just analyzes these five bhavas. Before we do that, let us just give you a very brief and very general overview of what each bhava is. Now, it's not at all detailed, it's just very broad and general. But I think it'll give you the basic idea, so at least you know where we're going in that general type of sense. So vibhava, we said, well, Prabhupada says, special symptoms or causes, and we said, most particularly actually, causes of ecstasy. So that is what vibhava is. In other words, vibhava is not actually ecstasy, a particular type of ecstasy. Vibhava means, very specifically, those things which cause ecstasy. Those things which make you ecstatic. Not like in the cases of the other four, some particular type of ecstasy which can be distinguished from the other types of ecstatic experience, you know, blissful experience. Vibhava means those things which cause ecstasy. Now, hopefully some of you have read through chapter 20 already, because Prabhupada does begin the discussion about vibhava in the second half of chapter 20. Anyway, one way or the other, maybe could one of you suggest what would probably be the main thing in Krishna consciousness which causes ecstasy, which arouses ecstasy, stimulates ecstasy when you have contact with it? Good answer, yes. Krishna, of course. This is Krishna consciousness. So, yes, Krishna is the main thing which stimulates ecstasy. And so we will find that in this section, there are these five ecstasies, and or five bhavas rather, and each one is dealt with as a wave in the southern side of the ocean. So there are five waves. Whereas the eastern side, if you're familiar with the whole subject, the eastern side had four waves, the southern side has five waves, and these five, vibhava and so on, listed here in the second paragraph, those are the five. So now the first wave, which is vibhava, is the discussion is just about to begin right here in chapter 20, and it'll go all the way through to chapter 26. Now, about half of it or so is discussing Krishna as a vibhava, how Krishna stimulates the devotees to become ecstatic in different ways, in many different ways, in fact, in 64 different ways, and then there are even a few more on top of that also. So Krishna, because of who he is and what he is like, he stimulates, causes ecstasy in the devotees, therefore he is pretty much the main vibhava. Yeah. Now we're just being very, very general here. To give you an example, which we will develop as we go step by step through each of the five bhavas, just to give you an example to illustrate the point, let us take Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda is there in her house, and she's perhaps doing her housework, moving around here and there. Of course, she's fully Krishna conscious always. But as she moves around, she's not seeing Krishna directly. Suddenly she comes around a corner and there's Krishna. And Krishna looks at her. And as she sees him and he looks at her, then immediately it's there already, naturally, her loving attachment for Krishna. But as soon as she sees him, oh, it just comes flooding out. So, that is the vibhava. That is vibhava. Then anubhava, the second bhava, this is actually an ecstasy. It is rather a complex type of ecstasy, I must say. But at this point, just keeping things very simple, let us say that it is like a very basic type of ecstatic response, a very fundamental type of ecstatic response, which is a direct and immediate reaction to exposure to the vibhava. So, to go back to our example of Mother Yashoda, there she is, she comes around the corner and she sees Krishna, and immediately, oh, there's a response within her, and she picks Krishna up and embraces him. So, we would say that is the anubhava, the immediate response, broad and general response of an actual expression of ecstatic love. Then we come to sattvika bhava, the third. Sattvika, Prabhupada says it's constitutional or existential, and we might wonder what that really means. That is, you know, actually, it's a very appropriate and very deep, like, sort of translation or very brief explanation of what sattvika bhava is. In technical terms, sattvika bhava means that bhava which arises specifically through the presence of Shuddha Sattva. Now, we talked about that a couple of days ago, how the level of bhava means that Shuddha Sattva potency, internal spiritual potency of Krishna, floods into the heart of the devotee, just like a ray from the sun of Krishna. And it has a big impact. And it has big effects. So sattvika bhavas, technically speaking, are bhavas which specifically arise from contact with the Shuddha Sattva potency, or from the Shuddha Sattva potency being present in the heart. Therefore, Prabhupada calls them constitutional. Because if you remember, that factor, that characteristic, that the stage of bhava means the stage on which Shuddha Sattva enters the heart, that was the constitutional swarup lakshana, most important characteristic of bhava, of the stage of bhava. So therefore, strictly speaking, in, you could say, a technical term, sattvika bhava means those particular ecstasies which specifically arise through contact with the Shuddha Sattva potency, or through the presence of the Shuddha Sattva potency within the devotee. Now, there's another way of looking at that, at sattvika bhava, and it's in terms of how we're addressing all these bhavas here. We have here, it's sort of like the way we're trying to explain things here is that these bhavas occur in something like a chain reaction. I mean, to some degree. So we already expressed that a bit, that there's the vibhava, and then the anubhava just flows from that. So we have Mother Yashoda seeing Krishna, vibhava, and feeling that emotion and expressing it by picking him up and embracing him. We said that that could be considered anubhava. And then, as she's embracing Krishna, and it's just, you know, becoming deeper and deeper, then she may cry. Or tremble. So now, this is a further subsequent emotion. So that is sattvika bhava. There are eight sattvika bhavas, and they can be understood in this consequent, in this sense of being another stage in a sequence beginning from vibhava through anubhava. Then there's sattvika bhava, a specifically emotional response. Then vyabhichari bhava. Prabhupada gives a rather sort of colorful translation of vyabhichari bhava here, aggressive ecstasy. Well, literally, this word vyabhichari means flickering. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, if you're familiar with the second chapter, verse... Oh, no, wait a minute. Yeah, Mamchio, that's the 11th chapter, verse 24, am I right? Mamchio avyabhicharena, it is actually. It says Mamchio avyabhicharena, but the a has been taken out. Mamchio avyabhicharena, bhakti yogena sevate. When you're engaged in devotional service, and you, Prabhupada says, and you don't fall down at any time. In other words, you're not flickering. You are fixed. So that is called avyabhichari bhakti. Unflickering, you know, totally steady devotional service. But vyabhichari means the opposite. Unsteady. Not constant. It's here one moment, it's gone the next. This is the idea. In fact, Prabhupada, he discusses this word avyabhichari and vyabhichari a little bit here and there. He says an interesting thing, that prostitutes are sometimes called vyabhichari. I mean, as a group, as sort of a title, they're vyabhicharis because they're unfixed. They're just flickering like that. Yeah, so vyabhichari bhava then means it's also an emotional type of ecstasy, but it's very flickering. It may appear just like that and go just like that and be replaced by another one, which may also then just go and be replaced by another one, which may also just go. But all the while, Mother Yashoda, as she's holding Krishna, all the while she may be crying. Just to go back to that example, Mother Yashoda then, she saw Krishna, she picked him up, she started crying, and then in her mind, she may have thought, oh, I am the most fortunate woman in the world. So, there are 33, actually there are many, but there are 33 main vyabhichari bhavas. One of them is pride, transcendental pride. So, in that sense, Mother Yashoda, as she's embracing Krishna and crying in her deeply emotional, ecstatic state, then she might think like that. How fortunate I am. I'm the most fortunate woman in the world. Then, who knows, maybe there'll be a knock on the door and her father-in-law appears there. So she has to get herself together a bit. So then she has to conceal her emotions. So the pride goes, and now a mood of concealment may arise. Concealment is another Vyabhichari Bhava. Anyway, the basic point which we'd like you to get at this stage is that whereas Anubhavas are very basic, very fundamental, general responses often, although having said that, as I think we mentioned, Anubhava is a very deep subject. But in certain respects, it can be seen like that. Sattvika Bhava is a very, very deep emotional reaction, which can be lasting. It can last even for hours. But Vyabhichari Bhava, the way actually that Rupa Goswami describes Vyabhichari Bhava, he says it's like you've got an ocean. And in the ocean, you get these little waves. They just pop up and go down. Then another one pops up and goes down. Now, they're popping up from the ocean. And here's that sense of sequence again, that the Vyabhichari Bhavas are coming as, you know, in a sequential sense, flowing out of the Sattvika Bhavas. But they flow out and manifest, and then they disappear back into the Sattvika Bhavas. And then another one arises out of the Sattvika Bhava, and then disappears back into the Sattvika Bhava, and is no longer visible. Am I making sense to all or any or some of you? Are any of you totally bewildered out there? Okay, well, that's a start. The wave? Yeah. Well, we were saying that there's a sense of sequence in these bhavas, that one tends to flow out of the other. So if the Sattvika bhavas are like an ocean, then the Vyabhichari bhavas are like the little waves that pop out of the ocean and then fall back into the ocean, and then you don't see them again. But then over somewhere else, another wave pops up and goes down. And it's quite even momentary, you could say. If not momentary, at least brief. That you won't find a single Vyabhichari Bhava maintaining itself for hours on end. It'll come and go. And then another one will come and go. Based on the mood of the particular Sattvika Bhava or Sattvika Bhavas, which are prominent at the time. Then the fifth one is Stai Bhava, and that is an extremely specific type of ecstasy. Stai, as we said, well, Prabhupada said, means fervent or continuous, and we said that maybe continuous would at least help us as a concept to understand it a little more, or permanent. So, Stai Bhava means the permanent ecstatic mood which the devotee on the level of Bhava always has, 24 hours a day. It never changes. So what is that? It means the mood of your eternal relationship with Krishna. So there are five main Stai Bhavas: Shanta Bhava, Dasya Bhava, Sakya Bhava, Vatsalya Bhava, and Madhurya Bhava. You only have one. Well, of course, sometimes it happens that there's a mixture. That's also possible. But there'll only be one which will be really prominent if there's more than one. And generally, there'll only be one anyway. You'll either be in a neutral mood, or a servitor mood, or friendly mood, or parental, or conjugal mood. Yeah. Although someone like Uddhava, anyway, there's some examples when we come to it. Some of the cowherd boys, like Sridham, friendly, of course, but there's some element, a certain type of element of a conjugal, some conjugal aspect, at least there, in a certain sense. Balaram, friendly mainly, but also parental to some degree. So there are five main sthayi bhavas. Generally, you'll just have one. You'll be in it 24 hours a day. That'll be like your whole basic, it's like the basic underlying mood of your entire ecstatic state. That's all. Then, of course, there are seven secondary sthayi bhavas, like chivalry, laughter, compassion, and so on and so forth. So they're also sthayi bhavas, but they're secondary. So generally someone, like take as a special case, she's in a parental mood, mixed with, I don't know what you'd say, maybe some chivalry, a bit of aggression or something like that. But it's sthayi, it's permanent. Mother Yashoda, as a mother, she is prone to a compassionate mood. Not an aggressive mood, really. Anyway, we won't go into the details now. That will come in due course. But sthayi bhava means the basic ecstatic mood which underlies everything. And all the other, again in terms of sequence, then the sthayi bhava would probably come first. Mother Yashoda, her anubhava, will be in the motherly context. Whereas the cowherd boys, they see the same Krishna. Their anubhava, their immediate response, fundamental type of response, will be in a friendly way. They're not going to pick him up and embrace him like he was their child or something like that. So in this way, the sthayi bhava, in fact, Rupa Goswami says, it is the king of the bhavas. It rules the others. All the others appear and manifest in terms of the sthayi bhava. And if they don't, then you get rasa basa. Okay. So, let's hope we've got the basic idea at this point. And then we can go on back into chapter 20. So now, in our overview books, we're in the first section called General Introduction on page 2. Now, after introducing the five topics, we go into a discussion about understanding this term rasa. So, Prabhupada, in the third paragraph on page 151, he makes... It's a very important point that, you know, we may sometimes loosely use this word rasa, but the concept which it actually is carrying is something which Prabhupada says you cannot really express in English. In fact, you certainly can't, or I wouldn't say certainly can't, but to just give a synonym, one word, is really not easy at all. Although Prabhupada makes the point that he has seen Srila Bhaktisiddhanta translate the word rasa to mean mellow. So Prabhupada says, is basically implying, or he says, so we're going to use the word in the same way. Translate the word in the same way. Or if we go back up to the end of the first paragraph, just to kind of give it a little more substance, transcendental mellow, Prabhupada said, loving mood, a very rich and deep transcendental taste of loving affection. This is what this term rasa implies. Now, on to the last paragraph on page 151. So, Prabhupada goes on, the particular loving mood or attitude relished in the exchange of love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called rasa or mellow. The different types of rasa when combined together. Now, my humble suggestion there is, replace the word rasa with bhava. In other words, the different types, the five bhavas that we've just been talking about, when they combine together, help one to taste rasa. Or not just help even, but that's how you taste rasa. Rasa, that loving mellow, loving mood, very deep, transcendental, ecstatic taste. This comes through the experiences one gets through the bhavas. Particularly as one advances further, they start coming more regularly and even more than one at a time, and it becomes very deep. All these ecstasies of different types just coming at you, one little person, but many of these powerful things at the same time. Oh. So the mixture of all this, this amazing mixture, which is all in the context of how you love Krishna and how you're serving Krishna and relating and the whole relationship is going on, this is rasa. And therefore we say sometimes that you have your rasa with Krishna. So this is the idea, that as these different types of bhava combine together, as that happens, that helps you to taste rasa to the highest degree. And again, Prabhupada goes on to say that this position is entirely transcendental to our experience. That's a fact. But still, we're going to discuss it and at least, you know, get some idea, although obviously we cannot claim to really be able to get it in the palm of our hand at this point. But at least let us try and get some little bit of a grip on it. So now, in our overview book, over to page 3, and over the page in Nectar of Devotion to page 152. All of page 152 in Nectar of Devotion, most of it, is a discussion on how you come to the point of experiencing rasa, or how you come. Of course, you only experience rasa when you experience the bhavas. So you could also say how one comes to the point of experiencing the bhavas. So Prabhupada gives, you know, you could say it's a fairly standard explanation, a fairly simple and straightforward explanation that you perform your devotional service, chanting, hearing, Prabhupada says it's in the middle of the first paragraph. Generally, this mellow is experienced by chanting, hearing, worshipping in the temple, and being engaged in the service of the Lord. So, he makes the point, first of all, at the beginning of the paragraph, that you wouldn't do anything if you didn't get some rasa out of it, some happiness, or mixture of happinesses, some taste. You wouldn't do anything, even on the material platform. And certainly in devotional service, why would you bother doing any devotional service if you weren't getting some rasa out of it? Of course, you know, on that level, like the neophyte level, even though we're getting some taste, it's very small compared to on the level of bhava. But at least he does begin by explaining in those terms. So, through developing one's program in Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting, associating with the devotees, discussing Bhagavad Gita, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, through these very standard practices, gradually you advance and you come to the point of bhava. In the second paragraph, Prabhupada makes the point that there are two ways you can come to the level of bhava, experiencing these bhavas. One is through practicing devotional service. The other is from your previous lifetime. Can any of you think of someone who suddenly came to the level of bhava as a result of devotional activity from the previous lifetime? Previous lifetime, suddenly coming to bhava, sort of out of the blue. Not really. Well, I mean, I suppose you could say Judd Bharat. I mean, you could actually say Judd Bharat. Why not? Yes. Yeah, maybe. Better example, Bilvamangal Thakur. I think he's generally the example we hear. And I think you probably know the story. He was, in that lifetime, he was rather degraded, actually. And one night he made some really major endeavor to meet his prostitute girlfriend. And after dealing with many difficult obstacles, he finally came into her presence. And he was just about ready to drop. And she said, gee, you know, if you were prepared to make the same effort for becoming Krishna conscious as you've been making for me, you'd be a pure devotee by now. And somehow it struck him. So, just like Maharaj Bharat, he just got up and walked out. And that was the last she saw of him. And he started coming to the level of bhava. And by the time at least that he got to Vrindavan, he had come to the level of bhava. And it was from his previous life. Somehow his spiritual master from his previous life, what was the name of his spiritual master from his previous life? Somagiri. Somehow Somagiri spoke through the mouth of the prostitute. It was not really that she was like an undercover preacher, something like that. Hare Krishna. But it was just Somagiri. Somehow or other, she just was used transcendentally by the Lord's arrangement as a via medium for Somagiri, the spiritual master from the previous life. And it immediately just set something off, And very quickly, he came to the level of Bhava. So there are these two ways. And then, in the last paragraph, Prabhupada quotes, it's actually the first canto, second chapter, verses 18 and 19, but he's really paraphrased them very, very briefly. They are, let's just give you the translation. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that's troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service under the personality of Godhead, who's praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So that it is coming to the level of nishta. That's verse 18. Then 19, as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. But that is not really just the ordinary mode of goodness. It is more the shuddha-sattva goodness. Yeah. In other words, those two verses are showing the devotee coming through nishta and coming and at least approaching bhava. So Prabhupada is explaining here at the bottom of page 152 how if we follow the normal process, regularly attend the Bhagavatam class, regularly serve Prabhupada and serve the spiritual master, serve the other devotees, then we will advance and come to the level of bhava. Meaning, we will start to experience these five bhavas. When we say, come to the level of bhava, that is specifically what we mean. That you will start to experience those five bhavas. Yeah. So then, in our overview book, introducing vibhava. Let us just try and go through this before we finish. At the bottom of page 152, Prabhupada says, being encouraged by such a feeling. Well, what feeling? If we look in the middle of that last paragraph, Prabhupada says that in Bhagavad Gita it explains that for one who's actually come to the spiritual platform, the first symptom visible will be that he's always joyful. Through reading Bhagavad Gita, associating with devotees, etc. So then, being encouraged by this feeling, one who's constantly engaged in discharging the regulative principles of devotional service in such a way as to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, develops two principles of compelling force which come under the heading of vibhava. So what are these two principles of compelling force? We've written it up on the board here, you see. The devotee will start experiencing, well, of course, vibhava is not exactly an experience, but vibhavas are things. They're actual objects, like physical objects, so to speak. But one will start finding these things acting as vibhavas on one. That one starts to respond to them as vibhavas, as sources of ecstasy. So, some things will be vibhavas of the alambana nature, basic nature. Some we will find are vibhavas of the udipan nature, impelling nature. Now this again may sound a little sort of difficult to really comprehend, but in our overview book, I think we've given a reasonable type of explanation. Basic stimulants stimulate ecstasy and experience it at the same time. So there are actually two basic stimulants, Krishna and the devotee. In other words, Krishna causes the devotee to become ecstatic, and the devotee causes the devotee to become ecstatic, in very simple terms. So in that way, Krishna can be an alambana, a stimulant for ecstasy, and the devotee can be his or her own alambana. Yeah. But there is a specific sense. There are two specific senses. Generally, that the devotee becomes stimulated to love. So therefore becomes the, we said, ashraya, the shelter of the ecstasy. And Krishna becomes the recipient of the love, or the enjoyer of the devotee's expression of ecstasy, meaning the devotee's devotional service. So therefore Krishna is known as the Vishaya Alambana. He is a stimulant, but by stimulating, he enjoys what he stimulates. And generally, the devotee is stimulated and gives joy, gives pleasure through being stimulated. Do we get the idea there? A little bit? We're just starting here. It's a deep subject. So that's there. Two types of alambana. No, the devotee himself. Otherwise, they become udipans. Udipan means an external source of stimulant, like Krishna's flute or another devotee. Seeing Krishna's footprints. You know the story of Akrura when he came to take Krishna? He was just coming in there at Nandagram. He saw the footprints. Now the footprints are something external to Krishna. They're his footprints, so they're connected to him. So they arouse ecstasy towards him, but the footprints are not him. They are external. So therefore we say here in our little explanation on page 3, impelling, udipan, impelling stimulants generally are objects that stimulate love. Generally, but not always. Again, it's a deep subject, don't worry. There's all sorts of complexity to it. But generally they are things which stimulate, which remind you of Krishna. And in that way, they stimulate your ecstasy. So, very simple introduction to what is vibhava. Then the last paragraph. Well, we could just... On page 153, we have noted here in the overview book, Prabhupada says, it's in the second paragraph, kind of, four lines down in the second paragraph. Prabhupada really gives a clear definition. The cause or basis for relishing transcendental mellow is exactly what we mean by vibhava. Can you see that there? Now, our last point then is Vishaya, Krishna as a stimulus for ecstatic love. Now, this is, I don't know who arranged this into chapters. It wasn't Prabhupada, but, I mean, if you kind of get into the flow of things, it would appear that this paragraph could have well been the first paragraph in chapter 21. It might have kind of fitted into the flow of things better. Because now we're going to talk about Krishna as an alambana. This quite long discussion about how Krishna stimulates ecstasy. So this last paragraph is talking about Krishna as Vishaya Alambana in a very specific way. And we have noted that here also. Here you see Vishaya, Krishna, and there are a couple of different ways Krishna manifests as Vishaya. This is one. The first one is called Anyarupa, technically. Anyarupa literally means another form. Krishna may accept another form and stimulate ecstasy in that other form. So this is the specific example being given here, that during the Brahma Vimohana Leela, Krishna assumed the forms of the cowherd boys and calves. So those are other forms of him. They are him. They're not the cowherd boys and calves. They're Krishna. But he has actually assumed a completely different form, or a number of completely different forms. So the description given here in the last paragraph is that when Lord Balaram saw the cowherd boys and calves, then he became stimulated by them. And if you know the story, it's there in the Bhagavatam, in the Krishna books. Balaram and Krishna were out there. It was almost a year after Lord Brahma had stolen the cowherd boys and calves. And even Lord Balaram up to that point did not know that the cowherd boys and calves that he was seeing were forms of Krishna. He thought they were the same cowherd boys and calves. But one day they were out by Govardhan Hill, and the older men were up on top of the hill with the cows, and the boys were down at the bottom with the calves. And the cows on top saw the calves, and they just galloped down the hill. Prabhupada says, with joined front and rear legs. That means galloping, if you know the difference between galloping and trotting. Down Govardhan Hill, too. And those are big cows. And Govardhan Hill was a lot bigger in those days. So when Balaram saw this amazing display, how the cows were attracted to the calves, he was just thinking that this is not possible. It's not possible. I've never seen the cows attracted like this to anyone other than Krishna. So a doubt arose. And then the cowherd men came running down, and initially they wanted to chastise the boys. Why did you come here? Now, you know, you've distracted the cows and they're disturbed now and whatnot. So you shouldn't have come here. You should have gone somewhere else. But then they looked at their cowherd boy's sons, and they just, well, they embraced them, Anubhava. They started crying, Sattvika Bhava, and smelling their heads, which is like a Vyabhichari Bhava. Yeah. And just, you know, just floating and drowning in an ocean of love for their sons, who they immediately before wanted to chastise. So again, Balaram saw this and thought, wait a minute. I've never seen these cowherd men attracted like this to anyone other than Krishna. And then he thought, it must be that. Krishna must have assumed these forms. So he got the idea. So this is Krishna. This is Krishna himself acting as an alambana, but in another form, a completely different form. Not just a disguised form. That's another type of way that Krishna manifests as an alambana in disguise. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But this means a totally different form. But still he stimulates that love. In this case, in Balaram. You know, what that could lead us to, although we don't have time to get into it now, is that sometimes Krishna becomes not the Vishaya, but the Ashraya also. There's a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of flexibility with all these things. So there Balaram has become the Ashraya. And Krishna as Anyarupa in another form is the Vishaya. Okay. Any comments or questions? They are Anubhavas. They're Anubhavas, yeah. They may be physical. I mean, they're physical expressions of ecstasy. Yeah. That you are so stimulated by Krishna that you will not waste a minute. You will not waste a second. You are just so stimulated. So it's like a very basic response. And it's like a very fundamental response which is quite pervasive throughout one's life. This is often, not always, but often the sense with Anubhava. Very broad, very general type of response to the Vibhava. And pervasive type of response, meaning pervasive throughout one's life. So in that sense, those nine are actually Anubhavas. That you're so stimulated by Krishna, you just want to chant all the time. And maybe you do chant 24 hours a day. So it's a very pervasive, very basic type of response to the Vibhava. The devotee, yeah, sees Krishna and feels love. Yeah, he feels that he has that love. So in that sense, he's the Ashraya. He has it. So he's got it. He's the Ashraya of it. And he expresses it in his actions, and Krishna enjoys it. So he's the Vishaya, although he stimulated it to start off. The devotee possesses the love. That's a sattvika bhava. Crying is a sattvika bhava. Vyabhichari bhava. It's much briefer. Flickering, yeah, type of. Yes. Alambana and Udipan, which come under the heading of bhava. So that's what we try to illustrate on the board here. Vibhava has two parts, alambana and Udipan. Okay, so you can go on if you have time, read chapter 21. It's all about Krishna, his qualities. It's very nice. Actually, what we're going to do tomorrow, we're going to try an experiment, is we got all these qualities of Krishna here, all 64. I'm thinking of dividing you all up into groups, and then you can discuss, you know, like each group, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever of the qualities, and think of different examples or situations in which Krishna displays the qualities. How does that sound? As an experimental sort of idea. So I think this is mainly what we'll do tomorrow. Okay. Srila Prabhupada Kirtan.